The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
It's a whistling Pete.
Sad. Wow. Always whistle.
Good morning.
Hi, Willis.
We're here. Hi, Aaron. Hi, Bob.
Good morning, Bill.
You've joined We the People.
Morning, Randy.
We the People Radio. You're going to want to join us online today. So we'll have to tell you that lots of times. WeThePeopleRadio.us. Because our guest is going to go through a bunch of different things on land trusts and things like that. And he's got some slides for us that actually...
And I know that sounds exciting.
Will help. Hey, okay, so back to what you were going to say.
What was I going to say?
I don't know. So you interrupted, and then I threw...
Oh, no, yeah. I wasn't going to say anything. I never have anything to say.
I'm drilling you with my eyes. Well, I'm not on pain medication. My nose isn't swollen. My eyes are not black this week. You know, it's a good day.
You sound like a fable. that almost was a children's nursery rhyme there.
Yeah.
You keep it up.
Yeah, it was like, what do you call it? The Big Bad Wolf... I could only imagine bitten by a small dog if you were bitten by a large animal. Just say no to large animals. Hey, did you hear they're going to bring back grizzly bears?
I did hear that. Yeah. Sierra Nevada Irritating. Range in California is marked as one of the prime areas for grizzlies. Apparently they like it there.
Apparently they couldn't find any mastodons to revive.
I can't wait to meet a grizzly bear in my backyard. I sound like I have an echo, Bob. Bob. Bob.
I don't hear any echo. Echo.
Oh, my gosh. If you're brave enough to call us, we should probably give them those details. The number here is 530-605-4567. And let's see. We're on here every Sunday from 8 to 10. We've got a ton of archives. Holy cow. They go back to October-ish of 2010 or thereabouts. And you can find those all online, wethepeopleradio.us, a page that Robert Exter maintains for us and just does a great job. He's got all sorts of good stuff on there.
Yeah, and, if there's something you want to know about and you can't find it, let us know.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I ran into a lady last week about something else, and we got to talking about, I don't know, animal stuff and whatnot, and I think it was probably the grizzly bear deal. And she donates money to the Humane Society of the United States.
Ah,
and I was like,
such a nice organization.
No, not HSUS.
No.
And so we've got those in our, we've got the HSUS programs in our archives. We did those shows with Diane Amble, and those would curl your hair.
You need to listen to that if you think they're a good one.
Very creepy and exciting, and I hear uh-oh going on over there on the phone. Uh-oh and something else. It's like, no, uh-oh's bad. What's the uh-oh?
Uh-oh, when you converted the Rick's PowerPoint to PDF, it dropped slide 11.
Oh, nuts. Oh. That was my favorite one, Bob. You got to kid me. Not
okay,
11.
So we won't get to 11 for a while, but we'll let Robert know.
As long as we still have number 9. Number 9.
Number 9.
Number 9.
But at least we have Rick.
We have Rick on. I was like, no, would something happen? I was just on the phone with him. What was it, midnight? Nothing could have happened. It was only 8 hours ago. So our guest this morning, we're gonna probably do, this is probably going to continue into next week, not because we couldn't pay attention and ran out of time, although that is always a possibility, but because there's too much information. And what? And his name is misspelled. Apparently, slide 11 has the word R in it because he is Rick Faust on our website.
Mr. Faust.
Poor Robert. I didn't send him the information until really late. He was tired. We dropped slide 11 and his name lost an R. He's Rick with one R now. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, you know, that whole thing about it might take too long to do the whole show, so we got to do 2 weeks. I think we're probably proving the point here. Okay. Rick is a natural resources consultant, and he works on economic, environmental, ESA, National Environmental Policy Act, GIS water analysis, and just kind of in general policy and regulatory issues. So, Here was a little quote. Let's see, what'd Robert pick? Nice picture of Rick there. And he says, the view to convince the IRS to view sheds as a taxable value upon lands not owned by the entity getting the tax benefit. The view to think, I can impose my will upon any neighbor within my view.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, because see, it's all about power and control.
And an iron fist.
And all that stuff. Boot. And I think actually after you see what he's got laid out for today, I think people will understand. Because a lot of folks out there, really well-meaning people that own property, are being sucked into these conservancies as a way to preserve their, you know, quote, preserve their property. And keep development from, you know, spreading all over the place and all that stuff. The problem is the long-term impact of that.
But they're not all bad.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen a good one.
Yeah, that's a good point. So, anyway, well, we fixed the PowerPoint at some point during the program. Refresh the screen. But if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, the thing that comes up is environmental communism. That's got all of its letters. So we're good to go on that one. And then... next week, we will probably have to continue. There's a great, let's see here. I'm scrolling. I do not see it, but there's a great thing he has on here about the land trusts and the conservancies and that kind of thing. And we'll go into that a little bit more. I just noticed on our page too, we have the free market warrior, Lauren Spivak. And, I was thinking, what's he doing on there? God, I have a short attention span. This Monday on the 30th, June 30th, Lauren will be in Reading doing his economic seminar on the Free Market Warrior. It'll be Monday night and Tuesday night at Destiny Fellowship Church.
And he's the fellow that wrote the faux Dr. Seuss books.
Yeah, The New Democrat.
Yeah.
And The Gorax, an environmental parody, an anti-environmentalist parody, I should say. And
if you don't have those, you got to get them.
I know, they're really funny.
They are funny.
So he'll have those, and he'll have DVDs of his seminar if you can only make one of the nights, but it'll run from 6 to 9:30 both nights, no charge. And that's Destiny Fellowship Church, 2570 South Bonneview Road here in Reading. So anyway, don't miss Lauren this Monday and Tuesday night. All right. We do all the announcer Ruskies. It's probably more, but I don't know what it is.
So far.
Okay.
So far, the chat room appears to be working.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't even try it yet.
I have three people in the chat room, including myself and Bill.
Okay, hold on.
It's on fire.
Well, we used to have a lot of fun in the chat room, and everybody was just like, meh. So,
well, we had some problems. Everybody,
I was told our webmaster had figured out how to take care of the parallel chat room. Parallel universe thing.
Yeah,
because there'd be two of us talking, and then you'd log out, you'd log back in, there'd be five more people, and yeah.
So far, so good this morning.
Nice. So, for those of you who'd like to join on the chat, please do. The link to that's on the... we have the Hillbilly Community Organizer on there. That's going to be one of those days. So, anyway. All right, Rick, are you hiding in there? You're very quiet.
I am here.
You were much chattier last night. What's the matter? You're not a morning person?
Well, no, I'm just letting you all have the full control.
You're just hoping we get it out of our system?
Yeah. I mean, you had a hard time getting it out of your system last night. You kept
I know.
Stop, go to sleep, go to the radio show.
I was like, I got to get off the phone. This isn't good. I'm going to be all screwed up tomorrow.
I can't tell you, Rick, how many times you said, hey, I just have to make a quick phone call. I'll be right back.
Hey, look.
4 o'clock in the morning.
He's trying to send me a gigantic file. And you know what? The internet was very uncooperative last night.
I'm sure that's what it was.
Stupid internet.
Every time.
All right. So, if you're joining us online, the Wildlands Northern California slideshow PowerPoint is on there, or the PDF slides, at which point you'll have to refresh so we can get slide 11 in there. But if you do have those up on your screen, it would be worth it to pop those up, and that way you'll have a... You'll have a good visual, and the rest of you, we will describe for you. They're like, oh, God, please don't describe for us. all right. So we're concentrating mostly Northern California, Southern Oregon today, just because we have to pick a place and analyze it, and you've already done all the work, right?
Yes. Basically, this is kind of like an extension of where we left off last week, because one of the big issues that we have in Northern California... is water, or the lack thereof. And I've been working on this area for quite some time, going back to the Klamath Bucket Brigades. I've got pretty extensive files on the long-term history and patterns of regulatory use and imposition in the region. And so for the sake of discussion, I decided to create this particular PowerPoint for the Klamath Basin, in particular Northern California, the Shasta and Scott Valleys. I know that some of the radio listeners are not able to see the PowerPoint, so we'll try to get into as good of a verbal description of things so that they can actually see for themselves in their minds what's going on, and then hopefully at some point they can acquire either a PDF or the PowerPoint and actually see these maps that exist. A lot of this material, actually the individual maps, came from various environmental web pages themselves. So this is not material that's hidden from public view. Anybody can go out and find this stuff.
But it's kind of like Dr. Kaufman's wildlands map that comes up later in the slide presentation, and a lot of people have seen that with the red and yellow, you know, areas for no human use, and then the limited use and all that. That was a compilation of information that he got, and he made the map out of it. So it's not like he didn't take it from somewhere else. He's the one who made it. So with this, you took data that was out there and then kind of put it in graphic form so people could see what it was really doing.
Yes, because one of the things that people don't understand about this project, this wildlands project, is what I call regulatory creep. They have multitudes of individuals that go collaborate and create different organizations, and many of these organizations have the same people in them, but they just have separate names, separate filings for recognition by business and government entities, what have you. So you have a lot of persons cross-playing into multiple organizations, and then these organizations are given some kind of regulatory power for various reasons. Say, for example, we have a city council. Well, they have the ability to impose zoning regulations on lands and other items like that. Some cities join with counties and have extended jurisdictional abilities on regulatory areas outside the boundaries of this city jurisdiction, but that's done by, for example, government cooperative agreements. Well, what happens is that we have created entities that are not necessarily government entities, but yet they are given the power as if they are. And so they create these regulatory zones on people's private property and eventually wind up dictating to them what they can and cannot do with their private property, which has an impact on the economic value. And if it's a business, say like a farm or ranch, it can impact the ability to continue with the economic benefits and generation that they were seeing prior to the regulatory impositions. So having basically said all that, we've created this series of maps to show where, for example, in this case, what the extent of the Klamath River Basin watershed is, how it goes up into Oregon. And I'm showing these two particular irrigation districts, so the Shasta Valley and Scott Valley, on the first slide. You get into the next slide, and this is a property ownership map, and it shows by color which entity has the jurisdiction or designation of that type of property, whether it's deeded, whether it's an Indian reservation, whether it's government land, whether it's state versus federal, BLM versus Forest Service. So they've already created these jurisdiction maps. In this particular map, everything that's white is private property. And as you go through a series of slides, you'll see where the focus of a lot of these programs to impose regulations are. And so once you understand that the Scott and Shasta Valleys, this large white area in the center, is where the majority of the economic activity occurs for the California section of the Klamath River Basin property. It's a pretty good portion of it. So therefore, there's a large portion that because of environment lawsuits and regulations, much of the natural resource economies have been eliminated or they're restricted to a very high degree on those government lands. Take, for example, I know in the northern area of the California zone, the crooks and river keepers successfully got gold dredging stopped. And so therefore, in all of these government lands, people can no longer go in there and work the stream beds and such to get a resource that is known to still be there, which actually has its own viable economy. You know, and I know people get in there and they say, well, it's going to mess up the fish, spawning beds, gravels, things like that. Well, that's for another discussion because there's actually science out there that shows improvements to spawning beds based on activities because of the way it works. But nevertheless, the point is they've been able to stop resource economics in areas where it once occurred. So the next slide, I actually also included the map that came from an environment site that shows all the grazing allotments in that same Klamath National Forest and River Basin in Northern California. Now, this is a map that they will use to identify who owns those allotments, and then they will study who is economically stressed or more vulnerable. And those are the low-hanging fruit for the environment community to go in there and talk to them about getting conservation easements or some other kind of economic assistance under the guise of protecting their legacy, when actually they're going through the back door to bring regulation onto these private properties. And allotments are in the nature of a private property encumbrance on government lands. So that's what a lot of people don't understand. These brown areas are all encumbrances of private property values that are taxable by the IRS and are regulated and treated as private property.
And this isn't anything new. They've been doing this for a long time in California.
Exactly.
Well, and the important part, like for the people that are actually looking at the slides, it's nice to have a graphic. I realize that radio is tough to be working with a PowerPoint series. However, this is something that people can go back to later. You can send this, especially if you've got friends, relatives, and they don't understand, you know, why any of this would be bad. Really, when you take a look in that second slide of the big white space that is private property, surrounded by national forest and then bordered on the north by Bureau of Land Management property, and you see the big open white spaces, I think by the end of the program, you know, for those people that are like me, you already skipped to the end and you already saw that the Nature Conservancy has a, you know, kind of a bullseye on that, like, oh, we want to.
They do?
I know, not them. They're so great.
Wow.
Right up there with Humane Society of the United States, right? But it's really important for the people in an area to realize that, you know, like Rick will talk about in this, you know, capitulating with these agencies, thinking, well, you know, they're going through a phase, you know.
Yeah, once they put a target on you, you better pay
attention. If we just work with them, if we just do a little bit of this, you know, then they'll leave us alone.
Yeah.
Or if you give them a little bit now, they'll go away and won't come back for more later.
Well, this is yeah, exactly.
Well, that's
we'll be
thing.
Able to, you know, we'll be able to bargain them off. Are you okay to tell people how you actually know this and how you come by this information, Rick?
Well, yeah, I'm okay with it. I've actually been studying this issue for close to, gosh, two decades. When I was at the university, one of my tasks as an environmental and economic policy analyst was to get into the organizations and study them to understand how their methodology works and how they bring projects forward. You've got, first off, your overall large picture of the wildlands project, but then they bring that down to the local areas, and they create these nonprofit organizations to then create a channel to get a hold of grant monies and other things to go after the private property encumbrances. And so what I'd do is I'd go to these meetings, I would sit in on seminars, actually be in some of their strategy sessions. This would be with people like Dave Foreman, John Horning, Sam Hitt, Jane Suckling, I mean, just basically the founders of the Southwest Center for Biological Diversity, the Forest Guardians, the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance. And so I've actually sat in direct meetings, and I've taken pictures and lots of notes, and at times I was actually able to record their meetings. So this is an accumulation of knowledge of studying their techniques and strategies for 20 years.
I like the names. And the names sound so harmless and helpful.
Yeah. They do, though, you know?
Oh, yeah.
They do.
That's where people fall in. Yeah, they go, oh, well, they have to be good. They have to be...
Well, like Nature Conservancy. How can you go wrong there?
Exactly.
Who doesn't want to do that?
Who doesn't want to conserve our natural forests and all the little animals?
Yeah, not wonderful.
I digress. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Hey, Rick, on the third page of your slide presentation. Okay, so obviously the Klamath National Forest is marked. There isn't a key on that one. What's the difference between the sort of brownish ones like Horse Creek and the South Klamath and Indian Creek and Scott Bar? And then the ones that are sort of that greenish color, like Kidder Creek, Shackelford.
Okay, the brown ones, okay, actually the ones that are like light brown and then the dark brown.
Yeah.
The darker browns are, well, first off, all of the browns are the grazing allotments, okay, showing their extent. And what happens is that we have on the forest, service under the Klamath National Forest, you have two types of regulatory jurisdiction, and that is what the light green and dark green are about.
Okay.
Okay. And so where you have the browns that are going towards a darker brown, that is basically the private property allotment boundary over that second level of jurisdiction.
Okay? So that's why the people in those... in those areas are having, it's interesting, Kidder Creek that is on this map, actually the folks in that area were approached by the attorney for the Farm Bureau, who wanted them to, I forget what he wanted them to knuckle under and do, but they had a secret meeting that he had a closed door meeting with them. They're always trying to get those guys to bargain off their rights up there. Interesting.
Yeah, and it's like, these people, they need to come to fuller understand what their property rights are. Because one thing, like when you've got somebody in the Farm Bureau that's trying to talk these folks that kowtow to what their other side's asking for, people forget that the other side never brings anything to the table to give up in exchange in some kind of negotiation. The people that are always giving up something or being asked to be given up something are the only people that have a stake in this game when it comes to real property values. And so when I start hearing about Farm Bureau talking to folks about, well, let's just, you know, give in, that tells me the Farm Bureau people don't understand the nature of property rights in the first place, and those are the wrong people to have inside that organization. But that's just my own opinion.
Sure. And instead of encouraging people to step up and help them deal with that, a lot of times it's more like if we just play nice and roll over for this one thing, we'll be fine.
Let's go collaborate.
Let's go collaborate. We've got to take a really quick break here. For people that are following us along, following along with this on the PowerPoint. We're cruising into slides 3 and 4.
Tell them how to get to that.
And I hope you will join us on that. It's wethepeopleradio.us. It's Sunday morning. Everybody's just drinking coffee, sitting around in their slippers. So pop in there and Rick will walk us through. We'll be right back with our guest Rick Frost. We're talking about all sorts of things about land, and it'll make sense of a lot of the other programs we've done, actually, and we'll get down into why they're doing what they're doing. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM. About them. You know, you listen to that song now with all the different things that are going on, and you go, man, that takes on a whole new meaning, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does. Hey, we're with Rick Frost, and we're talking about land trusts. I know it sounds a little boring, but actually it is very interesting.
It doesn't sound boring.
No, it's gonna get good when we tie all this together as to why all this is happening.
And for those of you that have, you know, that have been following, like, the Wildlands Project and that kind of thing, this is that. This is how the Wildlands project hits the ground in a place near you, or potentially on you if you happen to live in Northern California or Southern Oregon, since that's kind of our focal point today. So, let's see. What are we talking about? We're on wethepeopleradio.us. That's where the PowerPoint is. The PowerPoint link, actually, is missing page 11 for the moment, but the... We're not at page 11, so it doesn't really matter. And the just the PDF version is missing a page, but we hope
you'll join
us.
Right below Rick's name, you'll see a couple of files. You can go in there and click on the PDF. It loads a lot faster.
It does load faster, and it's easier. You'll just have to refresh
just
it here
scroll,
in a little bit.
Scroll down, and you'll be on the right page.
So let's see. We have moved. Okay, so we've identified how they decide who gets victimized, right?
Right.
So,
yeah, they move forward from there. In fact, you know, going off your comment about, you know, people don't realize, even though they don't show an interest in this, they don't realize that the interest is still shown in them by the imposition.
Oh, absolutely.
Kind of like that phrase is like, you may not be interested in politics, but politics is always interested in you.
Oh, yeah. And you're not going to realize how important this is until one day you want to go for a ride and go out in the country and the gate's going to be locked.
Sure. Or you think you have, you think the agencies have just kind of lost their mind because we have, a president that's on a mad dash power grab. But this predates this president, and it'll post-date him.
But the good news
most
is,
likely
is
too.
The good news is you'll be able to tell your grandkids, when I was up there, we used to be able to go on all that land.
Now, yeah, don't touch it.
Yeah, we just look at it.
All right.
Yeah, and you see, what's interesting, too, that a lot of folks don't realize, and on this issue of government lands, and I'll call them government lands because with the Federal Land Management Policy Act, FLIMPMA, back in 1976, Congress did away with public lands. So there are no longer any public lands there. A public land, by definition and recognition, is land that is open for settlement and entry for the purposes of homesteading. And Congress, with FLIMPMA, did away with homesteading. So therefore, all of these lands are no longer public lands. They are government lands.
Oh, see,
and
I didn't know
that. The environment movement and people will use this argument, well, I'm a taxpayer, so therefore I'm part owner of all that stuff. This is my property. It's like, no, it's not. It's federalized government land because we're talking about the United States of America corporation. We're not talking about the Republic here.
Right.
Under the Republic, we have lands open for settlement and entry. Under corporation, we do not.
So you just pay to maintain it. You don't necessarily have any right to go on it.
No, and they can bar entry at any moment for any reason that they want to, and this is how they've basically been trying to shut down the economics and the resources, you know, the economics based on those resources by shutting down entry for activities that used to be sanctioned.
So, interesting. Anyhow. Well, your descriptors on here for those people that are not, you know, that are not online folks, there are some great points here. You know, the goal of the Wildlands Project is to set aside approximately 50% of the North American continent as wild land for the preservation of biological diversity. That's a lot of ground. And the bulk of it is in the West.
Yes.
But when they say set aside, I mean, it almost sounds like they're setting it aside for you.
Sure.
You'll be able to enjoy these lands.
Well, the next point is the project seeks to do this by creating reserve networks across the continent. Reserves are made up of the following. Cores, created from public land, such as national forests and parks. Buffers, created from private and adjoining land. Note, private. So, you know, they want your private land, too. And the corridors are a mix of public and private land, usually following along rivers and wildlife migration routes.
Yeah, but the primary characteristics of core areas, that's the one I like.
Yeah, is that they're large, 100,000 to 25 million acres, and allow for little, if any, human use.
Yeah, no human use.
And so for the people who, honestly, there are a lot of folks out there that I'm sure are like, oh my God, these guys, you know, conspiracy theory and blah, blah, blah. Okay, then I dare you, go to the website, wethepeopleradio.us, click on the PowerPoint, look at the marks, and look at what's already been cordoned off, and then look what's in the target area.
And human,
it's huge.
Yeah, and human use doesn't mean you can't go in there and build a cabin. Human use is you can't walk on it.
Yeah.
You can't go there.
Hey, Rick, when you were sitting in their meetings and stuff, and they're talking about all this stuff, Why were they excited about this? To lock themselves out of all the land in the West? Or are they planning on actually being able to use it?
Well, the interesting thing is that if you get into listening to them, it's more of a theology and almost a religious perspective. And so there's this sense, a mind sense, that humans are such a bacteria to the world. We are such a cancer and terrible thing to the world that humans don't belong here because humans have messed it up. And so these people see themselves as the vanguards for helping to promote the removal of humans off with the end goal of this idyllic vision of humans no longer being in areas where they have moved into. They see this earth worship as the focus of where we should be, and that the humans are the alien species that needs to be exterminated. We are the, what's the term that's used? We are the encroaching species that needs to be eradicated, because in their mind, we are not native or indigenous to the planet. Okay? I mean, I know that's a really far abstract concept, but that's basically at the core of their belief. It's phrased by the term Gaia. And it's almost like, you know, a Gaian religion. And it's based on faith. It's not based on science. Now, they can claim science, but what they do is they put up straw man and ignoratio Lenci false logic arguments to try to say that their anecdotal conjecture is science. But unless you are very skilled in understanding how people use phraseology and words, you're going to have a difficult time going back against these arguments unless you're able to recognize them in the meetings while they're actively going on. Because what happens is that they will use this straw man false logic argument to actually win court battles on environment issues. And, for example, that's what happened with the Montague Irrigation District that recently had that settlement back in December. That was an argument that fell down along the straw man argument, and because the side of this issue got sucked into this straw man argument, in my opinion, they went down the wrong rabbit trail to stop it, because for one, they never challenge the standing of those that brought the lawsuit against them. But we'll get into that later.
Well, they also felt that if they gave in, that would be the end of it. They could pay once and move along.
Well, it's like this. It's the old farm joke. You know, you've got this pig that's running around with only three legs. And so this guest shows up and it's like, how come your pig's only got three legs? Oh, he's a pet and we really like him, so we're only going to eat him one little bit at a time.
You know? And so I'm kind of, I jumped to the last slide because honestly, it really fits. It's a quote.
Spoiler alert.
I am, spoiler alert. Conservation easements, the key to the corridors. And here's a perfect quote that Rick has for us. The only hope of the earth is to withdraw huge areas as inviolate natural sanctuaries from the depredations of modern industry and technology. Boo. Move out the people and the cars. That's, you know, actually exactly what they say. Reclaim the roads and the plowed lands.
Yeah, because part of the design is that once they've taken control of certain areas, they actually have in their plans that they have moved into various departments and government agencies, in this case Caltrans, where part of the plan is to literally go in there and remove all of the paved roads and take all the concrete out. Just let everything go back to being like it was before it was even a trail.
Okay. Wow. And that's Dave Foreman from Confessions of an Eco Warrior. And maybe you'd like to give folks, for people who, when they hear Dave Foreman, they don't have a shiver go up their spine. Who was he again, Rick?
Dave Foreman is the founder of the Earth First Movement. He was the one that wrote manuals on how to go out and put spikes in trees, how to put sand in the gear transmissions for heavy equipment, how to basically destroy the machinery and the economic viability of companies that are resource extractors. So he is the founder of the Earth First Movement that became basically a terrorist movement that spawned things like ALF, you know, the Animal Liberation Front, and some of these other organizations where they like burn down condominiums under constructions near golf courses up in remote areas, places that people don't agree that should be, like, for example, the mink farms, you know, the people don't like the fur movement. Well, what they do is they go in there, they turn all the minks loose, and then they set fires to all the facilities. Okay, well, that's Dave Foreman is the one that wrote the manuals for training people on how to actually carry out these acts of terrorism.
And for those people who think, well, that's ridiculous, they're never going to, you know, gain in any popularity and nobody's burned out anything near me, two words, Spotted Owl.
There you go.
You know, they've destroyed the economy in Northern California, Southern Oregon, and lots of other places. So
yeah.
If you think they don't have the power or they haven't figured out how to get the government agencies to actually carry out their plan, you're not paying attention. Apparently, we have to take one more break before the top of the hour, which is 7 minutes away, so we're just going to have one big, long, fun break with fun music. We're on with Rick Frost. We're talking about conservation easements. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and chat room's open and running. You're here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Sweating wreck, came out my man.
Born to be eliminated. Yep.
There's so many of them.
There's so darn many. The only hope of the earth is to withdraw huge areas as inviolate natural sanctuaries from the depredations of modern industry and technology. Move out the people and the cars. Reclaim the roads and the plowed lands. And, you know, the author of that statement, Dave Foreman from Earth First, apparently, right on cue, they are having an Earth First meeting right up there in... Where is it? Rick, did you see it? Where's it happening? It's up by...
I just know it's happening up in that region. I'm not sure what place for certain, but I know that Craig Tucker is one of their long-standing trainers on direct action activities, and like how to tie ropes and things like that, get up in trees, occupy them.
Oh, good. Refresh their memory on how to go out and...
Do bad things.
Sabotage things and get people hurt. And yeah, that's
yeah.
Well.
And so our good friends, the River Keepers, are participating in this meeting to train people how to engage in direct action activities.
Uh-oh.
Craig Tucker, I think, is with the Natural Resources Department of the Karuk Tribe.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, and he's a... it says right in here, one of their Earth First trainers. It's just amazing how these names, you know, they slide back and forth between all these groups.
Yes.
And on your presentation in here, you've got the Black Bear Commune. We aired that again a couple of weeks ago. For those of you that missed that program, you should go back and listen to it. It was very fun and creepy. But the Black Bear Commune is all over these maps that Rick has for us, and it shows how close they are to that. And there are a lot of our evil people at the River Keepers have been spawned by the Black Bear Ranch.
Yeah, it's amazing when you really look into who's who. They're all connected, and they're all working in the same direction. It just sounds like... we better all get organized and start realizing what's going on here, or they will.
Or else.
Yeah.
Hey, Rick. For those folks that don't really know much about Nature Conservancy, can you give us a sneak peek into what we're going to talk about next hour with them?
Sure. Well, what the Nature Conservancy does is that they are basically act as a land trust, and they have been working for years, both at the legislative level and also at the local level, to get things promoted under the name of conservation easement or purchase development rights. And so they will basically be the go-between the agencies figuring out what areas that they want to collaborate and target for habitat protection. And then the Nature Conservancy agents will go out and approach the landowners in those areas to talk to them about setting up a state account through conservation easement and convince them, as basically they are land brokers at this point, like real estate, but they are unregulated real estate land brokers.
And they're using our money to do it. We've got to take a quick break for the news here. We'll be back with Rick Frost talking about all this conservation easement stuff in the second hour. You're listening to We the People Radio here on KCNR 1460 AM Shasta Red. Welcome back. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online for sure today. That's a biggie. WeThePeopleRadio.us. If you want to call us, it's 530-605-4567. You're listening to Bill, Aaron, Bob,
and another, Rick.
And Rick Frost, our guest. We're talking about conservation easements.
And who really controls the land you think is owned by private private landowners, but really it may be owned by them, but it is not controlled by them.
Yeah, same too with the the property that should be ours isn't really ours. What is it? What's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine.
Oh yeah,
it's kind of the government. It's kind of the government way these days.
Yeah, we were chatting a little bit about the Nature Conservancy while we were on the break, and Rick, I think you've got a lot of information about Nature Conservancy and just how big and powerful they are.
But we're kind of blowing his flow here. We really ought to go back. We've got a PowerPoint on the website. So if you're at home, with your feet up here on a Sunday morning, listening and learning, or you want to go back and listen to this again in the archive. He's got a series of 17 slides, and Robert's in the process of the PDF version was missing one, but we're going to keep going anyway because I hate to miss how this all comes together. So, Rick, talk us through, we've got the Resource Conservation District on, the fourth one here.
Yeah.
That's a big, big area up in Siskiyou County specifically. We're looking up there, Northern California, Southern Oregon, very much in the news, whether you live there or not. It's happening all over the place, but that's our focal point today. That's a big area. You have any idea how many square miles that is, or acres, or whatever they measure it in?
Measured it out.
It's huge.
But what's interesting, getting back to this slide thing, is it's not just this RCD boundary of Shasta Valley. I mean, there's multiple layers of this regulatory jurisdiction with various functions, and that's why I'm trying. That's what this PowerPoint was created to try to explain all of this. For example, let's just go back to slide four. Here you've got the boundaries of the RCD. This is something that the people voted in upon themselves. Anybody can go in and look them up and figure out who it is. And they're saying, okay, we need to, control some kind of organized, growth of people's homes, things like that. So people vote those kinds of things upon themselves, along with the fees and associated taxes that would go with that. And so everyone said, okay, so it's just like, all right, I want a sewer, I want ambulance, I want police, so therefore let's, impose a property tax on ourselves so that we can pay for those services, which is, totally understandable. But then you start seeing how many layers of this are in there and the different levels of jurisdiction, regulatory power they have, it just gets astronomically mind-boggling. And so what I did is I took this boundary, I clipped it out because one of my backgrounds is in satellite imagery analysis, so I deal a lot with creating maps and such. So I took these boundaries as we go through the slide series, and I put them on that original map showing the property jurisdictions between the government agencies and private property. So pay attention on how these boundaries are imposed over the private property aspect. So if you go on to slide five, you will see how that RCD boundary goes over that region where the majority of the Shasta Valley private properties are. Well beyond weed, too, to the other side of the mountain, in fact.
Sure.
So then the next slide shows, the slide number six, shows the other area that, a lot of the folks, they don't want to see areas torn up, so they want to create these wilderness systems or these national monuments. In this slide, this came directly from the Siskiyou Crest Wildlands website, and in there they has the phrase, an arc for biodiversity. An arc for biodiversity is one of the phrases that Reed Noss uses extensively when he was promoting the Wildlands Project to the United Nations, when they were back creating the IPCC.
That's probably just a coincidence.
Hand
the IPCC, International...
That entire program.
An IPCC is International Panel on Climate Change or something like that?
Something like that, yeah. But Reed Noss was one of the key architects of that. And so this arc for biodiversity came out of that IPCC language. Okay, so let's take the boundary of this, which crosses the Oregon-California border, and they say, okay, we want to keep this area forever, be able to make it nice and pretty. And it's like, well, okay, Teddy Roosevelt and others in our history have created that legacy, and rightfully so, to some degree. But then what they're saying here is that in this region, we're going to stop all human activity. No more logging, no more mining, nothing. And so then I take that boundary and I put it onto the next map on slide 7. And so you can see where that boundary is over that private property ownership map. So there's like, oh, maybe, what, 300-500 private parcels up in that region. And so, yeah, it will directly, they will chase those people off their private properties. And it impacts them directly, which is pretty huge to those people. But to the overall scheme of things, this 300 to 500 parcels to the environment and to the federal agencies, that's nothing. That's dust. That's naval wind to them. You know, so they have no concern over how that's going to impact it. They think, ah, we'll just pay to pick them up and translocate them somewhere else, and they can go on and make a new life somewhere. So that, so they're very calloused about the individual heritages that are developed on people's private properties over generations.
That just blows my mind that they have that attitude towards private property. I mean, they really don't care, do they?
That's the key. Well, if you get into the literature from Dave Foreman and Reed Noss, they all state time and again, private property is the biggest impediment to a wildlands project, and that is the key to getting rid of the private property is through conservation easements, because we have to get the people off the land. That's their end game. Okay. Now go on to slide 8, and you'll see another area that is there on the Shasta Valley itself. Because of the salmon issue, they have declared that upper stretch of the Shasta as salmon habitat. So that means that they can now impose restrictions on water use, on fertilizers, on pesticides, on roads, on dust. Many, many other layers of environmental restrictions can be imposed on anybody living inside that zone. So,
and this goes from weed all the way up to Wairika.
Past Wairika.
I mean, this is a huge area, huge geographic area.
Yeah, so you go on to the next slide and you see how that is imposed on that private property map. See, so you can see that almost 90% of that habitat is private property. 90% of that salmon spawning habitat is declared on top of, you know, their private property and stuff. So that can impact the economics and the other aspects of working there, including if you want to put up a second house. Now all of a sudden you got to go and you got to get a whole nother layer of possibly environment studies to show how building your second house is not going to impact that habitat.
And we all know that's an impossible needle to thread.
And that
you just can't do it.
And in case you're not looking at that map, that does include that Lake Shastina area where they're doing the development with those beautiful homes up there. I wonder how those folks feel about it, or if they even know about it yet, because that's going to have a huge impact on what they're going to want to do up there.
Well, and the bullseye in that, yeah, it's pretty close to the middle, is Dwinnell Dam. The one they wanted to take out, but they couldn't get it out, so they thought they'd just, you know, sue Montague Irrigation District. So, you know, all these things are overlaid one over the other, and they don't replace, they layer on top of.
Right. And that Dwinnell Dam is part of that settlement agreement that came out in December. I think it's over 2,000 acre feet that the farmers are not going to be allowed to use. Now, the irrigation district doesn't own that water. It's the individual farmers that own that water. So my question is, whose water right did they violate, that they talk into giving up their water rights to this agreement? Okay? That's all. That's part of that Dwinnell agreement, that Montague agreement that's up there. Now, on slide 10, as we slide on, we get into the Caltrans Wildlands Project. Now, Caltrans, the California Transportation, they have this project that they have funded called the California Essential Habitat Conservation Project, a connectivity project. This is where they want to connect all of these large areas of national parks with these corridors as described in the Wildlands Project. And in that map, when this came directly out of 300-page report that the Caltrans put together. This is directly a map directly out of their book. And in it, they talk about how the properties underneath the yellow zones on that map, and you can go to slide 11, and I've actually zoomed in and shown the Mount Shasta area where everything underneath that yellow is where they want to change the roads, possibly take them out or completely alter them at taxpayer expense. So it shows that here's another layer of government regulatory imposition that's going in, and where they're going to funnel government monies to basically alter the private property aspect of those lands that are in there. Also notice on this map, there are no political boundaries. You will not find county lines. You will not find other political district lines. You will find what is known as eco-region lines. As in the case of the blow-up, you'll see that dark line. Well, that is where the environment groups that are on this council have designated eco-regions. And so we have the North Coast eco-region that's to the left of that dark brown line. And then we've got the, I forget what it is, it's some kind of Modoc Plateau, the eco-region that is to the east or the right of that line. And all, I've got the three major websites located there, so anyone can go and research this stuff for themselves. You know, they can go double-check this and actually pull down the reports and read them themselves. But what's most interesting about all of this is when you get into looking at who is behind the reports and stuff, you get down on page V or page 5 of this document, and Dr. Reed Noss, the architect of the Wildlands Project, is on the board of peer review scientists that is overseeing this document design and implementation. And so we already have a major, major architect of the Wildlands Project sitting in on an advisory panel telling the state of California how they can implement and move forward with this Wildlands Project. So
much for an objective view.
Yeah, so it's all, you know, so before we don't want to move forward off this just at this point, because this is really important. And just for a little side note, if you're looking at the PDF version of this, refresh your screen, because you should see a green map that says Caltrans Wildlands Project Goals, red page with a green and yellow map, and then the next page should be California Essential Habitat Connectivity Project, and it ought to be a little blow up of the Mount Shasta area. That was the page that was missing. But for all those people who have been told or tried to share this with a relative or a friend, and they go, "Oh my God, you guys all think the UN's coming after you, blah blah blah, Agenda 21 is fake." Here is one of your tightest links. Because here you have, here's the description. The California Department of Transportation and the California Department of Fish and Game commissioned the California Essential Habitat Connectivity Project because a functional network of connected wildlands is essential to the continued support of California's diverse natural communities in the face of human development and climate change. And that's lifted right out of this document. If you go to Department of Fish and Game, so dfg.ca.gov, you'll find these maps there. I mean, this is well documented. Then you blow to the fifth page, you see Reed Noss, you know. All of a sudden, you can make the link between, you know, for the people who've been blown off on Dr. Kaufman's map of the Wildlands Project, and they can't verify that somewhere else, you can verify this. And interestingly enough, this map is green and yellow. The other one's red and yellow. But you'll see that they match up perfectly. Absolutely match up perfectly. This is a very well-orchestrated plan that is being executed by Caltrans, Department of Fish and Game, and Department of Transportation. So they got a lot of money, a lot of clout, and it's going to affect all of us. So just in case you thought you were getting out, Wait, hold on to that, Rick, because I just looked at the clock.
Fine.
We're going to wind up with all our breaks at the end again. And we know this is going to spill over into another program, so we're not going to panic here. Just have fun. We're going to come back. What?
No.
Okay, we'll be back with you in 2 minutes.
Okay.
We're here at KCNR 1460 AM.
Poison the ocean. Bulldozers ravage the land. We've taken from sweet Mother Nature just about all she can stand. She just keeps holding our hand.
Oh, Bob, you're just trying to make us mad.
There's a big tractor loose in the forest. Ripping the trees from the earth.
No.
Those redwoods are falling to progress, but a few roots still grip the earth. How much is that timber worth?
A hell of a lot.
Quite a bit, actually.
It's time to start asking some questions. Like how
yeah, really. More of the facts.
See, I'm not sure if this is Hank Jr. being totally sarcastic or if this was early Hank Jr.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, does this turn around? Can't take anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's solidly Tea Party these days.
Oh, good. He must have been kidding. They're still probably going to play it at their Earth First rally. Oh, my gosh.
Aaron.
Brutal.
Marshall.
Hey, Rich.
How you doing? Can I get in a quick supplement to what Rick has been saying to bring it home to Siskiyou County?
Sure.
Okay. One thing people don't realize, and this hasn't been brought up yet, but should be, is how the funding works in this Nature Conservancy operation and Trust for Public Lands. These monies are coming from the taxpayers, we the taxpayers, and the way they do it is they're bringing in the Clean Water Act, there's always language somewhere in that Clean Water Act, including this new bond that they're trying to put through, that provides funding for fish and wildlife and some of these other agencies to acquire, quote, habitat. It doesn't say buy ranches, it says habitat. But the way they use that money is they use that as seed capital with Nature Conservancy, for example, to acquire ranches, which we've had done now in Shasta Valley. And then later, the name comes off the Nature Conservancy, and it becomes under the control of Fish and Wildlife, such as the piece we have in Shasta Valley that was purchased recently. So it's an insidious effort to do what Rick is talking about and do it with public funds.
Sure. Sure, because if you had to do it with private money, it costs too darn much.
Yeah, Fish and Game has been involved in the acquisition of land with the Nature Conservancy in their back pocket for decades. That's been no secret. And California has been a huge target.
Hey, Mr. Frost, are you still in there?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Thought we had you. I thought we had you on radio silence. Anything you want to pipe up on that?
Well, you know, Richard's very correct in this seed money aspect because that is actually part of the design of them using the federal monies.
Sure.
Because what a lot of people don't understand is that by using federal monies, it creates a federal nexus on private property, okay? And what that means is that any future activities have to go through some kind of scrutiny under the federal agency's guidelines that issued the money, whether it be Fish and Game, EPA, whatever, okay? The issue with that people don't understand is that this is how the federal government gets into private property through the back door without having to do any kind of eminent domain taking, so they don't have to pay for taking control of the land under the 5th or 14th Amendment aspects of our Constitution. And they can then, once they've established a habitat from that federal nexus imposition, they can then start extending from that seed land into the neighboring areas. For example, if one of the strategies that the Nature Conservancy and these agencies will do is that they will look at the bottom of a watershed and figure out who owns the land on a confluence of water down there. So then they'll approach and get a conservation easement or another thing. It's a CCHP. I can't think of the name of it right now. I just know the acronym. But it's another means where they get control of the private property by imposing habitat restrictions. So once they get that established, they can come in at the future at any time and extend the boundaries of that habitat regulation, saying that, well, we're downstream from you and the water coming off of your property is going to impact the habitat conservation values that we've imposed on this land, so therefore we are going to be able to impose habitat restrictions on your private property without being paid a dime. Because, and we're going to do it because the water coming off of your land from rain is coming onto our land and we don't want your pollution. And so that's one of the key ways that they try to tie up watersheds. And they do this through conservation there, Rick, easements and other mechanisms.
Hey, Rich.
Rich, yeah. Yeah, this is Rich Marshall.
I know, we can't. Hey, Rich, we can't hear you very well.
Acts on these public projects because they're going through the back door, through the private door with Nature Conservancy and avoiding having to do CEQA.
Sure. Which is also a nice trick. We need you to get closer to your phone or something because we can't. It's very hard to hear you.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, there you go. You just got louder.
Okay.
To kind of tie this up, because if we get our ideas spread too far, sometimes it's hard for them all to connect up. In Rick's slide presentation, so in case you'd like a frame of reference. The key to the corridors is the conservation easements, according to Dr. Reed Noss. And let's see, that's on 12. Go ahead, Rick. You know Mr. Noss a lot better than we do.
Unfortunately,
you got a few quotes from him there. So this is the guy who is a consultant on the Caltrans Department of Transportation, Department of Fish and Game. Habitat Connectivity Project. Now here are some of his thoughts. He's such a nice man, I'm sure. Hit it, Rick.
Yeah, it's like back when he was putting this together, he actually says, well, he wants at least half the land in the lower 48 states want to be classified as corridor zones within the next few decades. So few is what, four? So in the next 40 years, they see this, and in roughly half a century, they want to move forward. This was written back in the late 1990s, and this was 2014. And now we've actually got many organizations that have been put in place to enact this agenda. The other thing that Reed Noss says is that the native ecosystem and the collective needs of non-human species must take precedence over the needs and desires of humans. This is why when he draws his maps, he has no political boundaries, because he does not recognize private property or any political jurisdiction. And so therefore, when they're looking at this habitat stuff, the human picture is completely removed from their mapping goals. And then he also says he would offer more ambitious long-term goal for at least 95% of a region be managed as wilderness, which means only 5% of the area is left for human habitation. Now, something that's also interesting about this connectivity project, if you will, you know, go look at that document. In the first five pages, in the Roman numeral pages, they list all of the contributors, the peer review scientists, all like that. One thing of interest is that if you will look at that very closely, there are practically no counties as participating agency members of this thing, and nowhere on that list of participants will you find an irrigation district. So they therefore intentionally keep the private property resource economic users off of these committees so that they have no say in how this project is going to impact their private property and economic activities. To the counties, that should be important. Why? Because they run off of property taxes. And if you have diminished or removed property from the tax rolls, that's going to increase a significant burden on getting the day-to-day operations of that county going for just the infrastructure. And so the counties don't understand that this wildlands project is removing money from their coffers for operations. And so that, I thought, was kind of interesting, is who is not included on this 300-page study.
And unfortunately, they're not going to realize it until it's too late. They're going to look up and go, geez, where's our tax money?
And yeah, exactly.
It'll be too late.
It'll be too late. Now, moving on to the slide, one key element we cannot leave out is the Karuk tribe. It's on slide 13.
Now we move to the footprint on the ground again. Back from the idea. For those folks who want to look some of this up, the Science and Collaboration for Connected Wildlands is scwildlands.org. And right there you can go to the projects. You've got Bay Area Critical Linkages. Hello. California Desert Connectivity Project. South Coast Missing Linkages, California Essential Habitat, California Safe Passages, Wildlands of the Santa Clara River Watershed. Joshua Tree. This just goes on and on and on. You ought to look at the plans they have for the state of California. Then you look at how they're driving out all the economic factors. And, you know, I'm dying to know, who the hell's going to pay for this?
Well,
I mean, who's going to pay for this, really?
Well, it's our taxpayer-funded money that's paying for all this.
Isn't that fantastic? So, I'm sorry, on page 13 of your either slides or PDF, you got the.
Yes.
Now we move into the tribes. How they join the fray.
This is one of the other large factors in the room, and it's this Karuk tribe. This is a map where they're showing their claimed Aboriginal territory. The Karuks were very instrumental in this lawsuit against Montague, for example, and as well as several others. And they've got some rather interesting history as well, based on their activities on natural resource issues, on dealing with salmon and such. Well, anyhow, this is their claimed territory. Well, what's interesting is there's a lot of controversy over this tribe because there's information out there that they stole the treaties from the Shastas to basically try to claim federal recognition that they really don't have. They eventually got some recognition, but they have no reservation. They have no federally recognized fishing rights. That is a state-issued recognized right at Ishi-Pishi Falls, like that. Either way, it doesn't matter, because the truth is, when you get into the anthropological studies of the Karuks, it turns out that the Karuks moved into the Klamath region in approximately 500 A.D. because there was another tribe that they had problems with. They couldn't push back, and so they were chased out of the Bay Area, and so the Bay Area is their true Aboriginal territories. And so they moved into the area that is now the Upa and the Wairocs, and they kind of imposed themselves on that, and now they're trying to claim everything to the east of the Hoopa Wairoc Reservation is Aboriginal, when in fact there's no anthropological evidence that supports it. And so you take that map and impose that onto the private property map, and there again you can see how large of an area that they are trying to gain recognized control of, and so they can then impose their layers of jurisdiction on there. But they have, this is not recognized by any federal agency as reservation land, so this is very contentious. And so because they have in my opinion, a false standing. This is brings in questionable jurisdiction of standing to any claims that they may have for their salmon habitat or whatever, but they are a large party to this recent Montague Irrigation District decision judgment that happened back in December.
In partnership with the riverkeepers.
Yes, and there's many people that are in the Karooks that are members of the board for the riverkeepers as well. And interestingly enough, all of them came out of the Black Bear Ranch, which is a very interesting place that came out of the days of rage in the Chicago riots in 1968. And if you get into the Black Bear Ranch history, you will find where they set that up and designed it specifically as a training center for direct political action and other kinds of basically, in today's terms, terroristic activities and such to be carried against the capitalist system. That's the whole Black Bear Ranch. That's a whole nother interesting aspect. But nevertheless, they are a key organization center for helping educate others and to develop multiple organizations to go after the resource providers. Okay? And so you take all of those maps that we've discussed and you go over to slide 15, and I've colored them all in, all the layers, so you can actually see that regulatory footprint on how it impacts just that one local area in the Klamath River Basin. You know, and then you go to the next one of map 16, slide 16, and you can actually see the Dr. Kaufman's map and how the red areas correlate to that map that I put together on slide 15. Now, what's interesting is that in the Wildlands Project, they actually recognize Indian...
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
I think we
might be a good time for a break.
I was like, I just heard the little horn where the computer goes berserk. We better take a quick 2-minute break. Last one before the top of the hour, and we'll be back with Rick Frost talking about conservation easements. Oh, I love this song. It's one of my favorites. You're listening to We the People Radio. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Lots of land under starry skies above. Don't fence me in. Let me ride through the wide open country that I love. Don't fence me in. Let me be by myself in the evening breeze. Listen to the murmur of the cottonwood trees. Send me off forever, but I ask you please, don't fence me in just.
I know you think wrong, but it won't be long before you leave them all far behind. Cause it's the new Mother Nature taking over. It's the new Splendid Lady come to go.
She's getting us all.
She is getting us all, too.
Oh, boy.
That's a good theme song for you, Rick.
The new Mother Nature.
The new Mother Nature. That'd
she
be great...
is a beast.
She is, too, man. She wants everything. She's just more and more and more and more and more.
God, I actually remember going to that concert.
And you were probably having fun, and it didn't mean anything.
Well, back then, I had no clue what the world was about either.
Well, that's what I mean. Back then, we were all happy. We thought those songs were about, you know, whatever,
yeah,
nothing.
Back then, we didn't remember the next day that we went to the concert.
Well, there was that. After you got done picking the grass out from under your eyelids.
What kind of grass?
That was Dale the Green. I went to a Ted Nugent concert on Day on the Green. Let's see, it was Blue Oyster Cult, Ted Nugent, I forget who else. You know, I remember getting there. man, that's probably why I'm not all the, probably why I'm not all that sharp these days sometimes. You think about that, you go, God, you know, you could have really been on your game, but no, you were young and stupid.
I could have been president.
Oh, well, anymore that goal is kind of... Yeah,
anybody can be president.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry. mumble. Move along.
I have nothing to see here. So, Okay. I cannot believe we actually walked this all the way through. Last night when we were looking at this, I thought, you know, Rick, this is an ambitious project you have for us tomorrow morning. I really do hope people will, you know, if you're doing something else and you're not on your computer, I really do hope you'll go online and jump onto this slideshow and flip through this. And even if you know, don't listen to the whole program when you go through the slides, seriously, when you get to the, 15, and you see that gigantic red footprint of the overlay of all these different things, it's massive.
And that's just that region. That's just that one tiny area. This is going on across the entire nation.
Right. You just did a really finite study of one, you know, just overlaid on one place. But that is a ton of territory. And don't you think it's funny? Well, okay, funny bad, or funny strange, that the Black Bear Commune just happens to be like just one little click outside the area that is massively overregulated.
Well, yeah, well, it's not a coincidence.
No.
I mean, they've been planning this for years. They've been training people for years on how to get in this thing. There's multiple environment organizations that Felice Pace and the other members of this Black Bear Commune have founded. They have nonprofit recognized status, and they, as independent organizations, can bring lawsuits to anybody in the area. And so you have multiple organizations with standing that can come and bring lawsuits, but yet it's all the same people once you dig down past the veneer of the organization.
Boy, it really doesn't say much for the rest of us. I mean, they've been working on this, and look where they're at, and we've been kind of sitting on our hands.
Well, we've been working.
Thinking the right thing will just magically happen.
No, this is like rust. It creeps in over time, and if you're not up on your game about keeping rust off your metal, you start losing the integrity of your metal.
Yeah. I just kind of blows me away. So, all right, we've got like 10 minutes here.
Okay.
You know, we can go one of two directions. I mean, you can give people an idea of how. I mean, we already know that this isn't right, right? So we can you know, we've kind of beaten that in the head that this is all stupid, goes someplace bad. What can people do about it? And how are we? I guess more importantly, you have figured out how we're being, how this sleight of hand, I guess, is getting people to capitulate via settlements, conservation easements. We're rolling over for this.
Yeah, they are. You know, and it's because people are, for the most part, through my experience, most people are not up to speed on what their rights are as property owners. And so it's one of the things I've been trying to do over the years is educate people on what their rights are, because if they don't know what their rights are, they don't know how to even fight or defend their property, you know. And many people that I've encountered, they're like, well, how come I don't know this? Well, who taught you? Well, nobody. Well, did the public schools ever tell you about any of this? Did anyone ever sit you down and help you understand? No, it has to be a self-directed learning experience. And another person I work with, Dr. Angus McIntosh, when we talk in these public meetings on what the rights are of the property owners and how to stand up and push back, one thing that we come to a conclusion is if you don't know what your rights are and if you're not willing to fight for what your rights are, then maybe you're not the person that should be owning property and that you should just go rent. Because this is something that takes an active position of knowing what your rights are. It's like a full-time job in addition to everything else that you're trying to do by being a property owner. And so they need to get involved in understanding what the councils, the city and county councils, are trying to do with them. They need to fight the regulation at the grassroots level. For example, there's a casino that they want to put in Wairika. Well, it's being done by these Karuks that have questionable standing as a tribe to begin with. Their leader, Leif Hillman, is a known felon. He's got, you know, a couple of convictions under his belt with prison time. And there's other questionable members, one of them being the head of the Karuk Natural Resource Department. He just recently got sentenced to prison along with the Mad River biologist for fraudulent invoicing on federal projects for the spotted owl.
Well, how
they're already very questionable characters, and now all of a sudden they want a casino that hasn't been ratified. Now, one thing I would suggest is that if people do not want this casino in there and they do not want a criminal organization to run this operation, is to start writing letters to their state legislatures that are, by the way, up for election and saying, if you ratify this thing, we're going to be able to say that you are sanctioning a criminal activity being run by known felons. Okay? I mean, that's the implication that can be made there. And that they need to start a massive grassroots campaign to contact their legislatures to stop the ratification of this casino that Governor Brown signed an agreement with back last fall with the Caroots.
Well, that whole casino thing generates so much money. People are really going to be in for a rude awakening if they allow a casino, I mean, that they already know is going to be controlled by criminals, to come into their community and operate. I mean, it's just got bad news written all over it, and people need to step up and say something.
Well, and also, too, there's a lot of drugs that are grown in that area. That's well known. Here we've got the river keepers and the Crooks and the folks in the Black Bear that have sued to get this water shut down on the irrigation district under the guise of salmon habitat spawning protection, right, because they want the water for the fish. But yet the California Department of Fish and Game just released a report in February where they've identified that the rivers in the region, in the Klamath region and all throughout Northern California, they're under drought conditions and going dry because of the illegal diversion of water for marijuana growing. In fact, I went into that report, and they showed that in their estimation, the illegal diversion of water amounts to almost 230 acre-feet of water. And the biologists at the California Department themselves are saying it's this illegal marijuana diversion that is drying up the spawning habitat waters for the salmon. So the very people involved in getting this water stopped for irrigation for agriculture are the very ones that are actually now causing harm to the species they claim to protect. And if people don't get involved and start writing their legislatures to get things corrected here, this is going to continue. This rust is going to continue to erode the metal of your constitutional and private property rights integrity if you don't get involved.
Well, that whole casino thing, where do you think they're going to spend their money once they get that thing put in and start generating all these funds? They'll just turn around, take that money, and beat these people over the head with it and have even a stronger position to take their property rights.
Well,
they take the money and they use it for litigation
exactly.
For the other property owners. And they get seed money from one, then they take that money and they go to the next one, and then the next one, and then the next one, and they just don't stop.
Well, for the people who want to see, you know, if you're thinking, oh, marijuana, blah, blah, doesn't use that much water, I always like to make sure that we highlight the fact that we actually have fact. If you go to the website and refresh your page, actually, because Robert just added it. So wethepeopleradio.us, hit a refresh button. You'll see the Wildlands Northern California slideshow and then the PDF just under Rick's picture. Then there's a link to the impacts from marijuana cultivation. That will pop up for you in a handy-dandy, I don't know how many pages, it's quite a few. And you can go through, you can see all the satellite imagery. It's like 33 pages. And this is done by, let's see, who did this? California Department of
Fish and Wildlife.
Yep, Fish and Wildlife. And I've actually seen this at a, I don't know, something I had to go to, and watch them walk through this. And some of the massive satellite photos, or not satellite photos, aerial photos, they fly over and take pictures of these grows. And I think we all know they're pretty big. But, man, I mean, this one on, what is this, like page 6? Unbelievable. I don't know how. Doesn't say on this particular one, it doesn't have a caption on it on how much space this is, but it's interesting. It's surrounded by green trees, but right in the middle, it's all dirt. Well, where did the trees go? We kept thinking they clear-cut those, huh?
No, they picked a spot out that wasn't growing anything. They were concerned.
Yeah, they did. They picked a great spot. It's just crazy.
Was anything there anyway.
NOAA, there's a NOAA map on here that's got all the little red dots of habitat here in southern Humboldt. I tell you what, I used to live over in Humboldt County. You know, actually, there's more red dots there than I thought there even were. And I'm sure it's growing. So.
Oh, absolutely. Well, look at the next two slides, the ones where it's comparing Post Mountain from 2005 to 2012. That's only 7 years. Look at the change in 7 years from these operations.
Yeah, and this is, it doesn't tell you how high up it is, but this is a very high aerial photo. This is probably satellite, right?
It's satellite, yes.
Yeah, so it's way up there. And so, you know, you can't pick out any houses or anything, but you can tell it's either green or it's brown. Browns are the roads. You can see the roads. You can see the rivers on there. And then you look at the next one. You have a lot of brown patches that just happen to be sort of odd-shaped. Probably perfect for growing pot.
Clear-cut.
Totally clear-cut. Yeah, because those are not natural die-off patterns.
No, and what they're finding out is that the water going to these areas is sucking the rivers dry, plus the chemicals and the fertilizers used on these plants, many of these chemicals are illegal to even use in the United States, are being used on these plots of lands. And so when the rains come, the chemicals are washing off of these lands into critical habitat for the salmon and killing off, it's poisoning off the fingerlings and the spawning aspects of the fish.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that Fish and Game doesn't go after all this chemical contamination that's going on out in the woods.
Well, neither does the North Coast Water Quality Board.
No, they're not interested in that.
That's dangerous up there. Those people don't own that land. You can't fine them. You can't fee them. You know, you can't do any of that, and it's probably not real healthy to go up there. They're fairly well armed. So, at the end of the day, got about 30 seconds here, conservation easements, the key to corridors. Here's a quote from the guy that's been working on it for a long time. I would offer a more ambitious long-term goal that at least 95% of a region be managed as wilderness. Well documented. I hope you'll share the program with your friends. We're going to have Rick Frost back next week. We're going to talk in more generality and a little bit more on specifics on what you can do about conservation easements. Thank you, Mr. Frost.
Thank you, everybody.
We very much appreciate it. Hit the website, wethepeopleradio.us. Lots of new stuff pops on during the program. And thanks, Bob. See you next week. Bill.
Aaron.
Sovereign Minds is next. Show up at the seminar tomorrow night, Reading Tea Party, 6 p.m.
Thanks, Aaron and Bill. KCNR, Shasta, Reading.